Today is October 7th, 2015, and this is episode number 327 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I'm a can of spray paint. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
A can of spray paint, you say?
I am a can of spray paint. Just press my button and whatever. I'll just stop.
You know, I think that's for the best.
I will just stop. Now, we should... You were out last week, and Adam was substitute co-host.
Yes, I was at Mac Tech Pro in Denver, which is really cool. So I'm glad Adam was able to fill in for me.
Yeah, and it was a fun discussion. It was a different discussion, of course, as it always is when it's not the two of us.
Sure.
By definition. It was definitely a fun discussion, but we did get a bit of viewer mail, listener mail. Reader mail.
Well, some people, they may see the show in their mind. So in that sense, sure. Viewer mail. That's right. I love that band.
Brad Hurley said he's gonna hate himself for shooting us this email for a long time, I'm sure. The reason for that, I think, is because getting all bent out of shape over something as trivial as someone else's opinion about anything is just silly, he says. It's just their opinion, after all, he says. Yeah, everybody's entitled opinion. To one.
Sure.
He says. Which I agree with, although this makes it sound like I don't agree with him, but I do. But anyway, so here's what he's writing about. So one of the things we talked about, Adam and I, were large screen devices, or in your honor, phablets.
Anyhow,
he said, after listening to our conversation, he said, Adam Christensen, this is a quote, Adam Christensen genuinely and perhaps somewhat militantly prefers the small devices over the larger ones. Good for him. That's great.
But, you know, in Adam's defense, he had the 6 Plus.
Yeah, hold on. Let me finish with
okay. Okay. Yes. I'm sorry.
He said, good for him. That's great. I happen to prefer the larger ones, he said. God bless him. After all the opening 12 or so minutes of 6 Plus bashing, I was starting to get my feelings hurt. Sniff, sniff. So there you go. I love the larger screen of the 6 Plus. I like the iPad. I like the iPad Pro even more. Don't hate me because I like the slightly larger screen sizes. Maybe it's a Freud thing. I don't know. It's a great email, Brad. Thank you very, very much for writing in.
That's an awesome email.
It's an awesome email. So I wrote to... Adam, I didn't speak to him or anything because, you know, we're not on speaking terms.
Understandable. I mean, after all, who could possibly like Adam Christensen?
No, it's like he's the second biggest gentleman on the Mac web, the first being John Martellaro.
Adam is just one of the most awesome guys I've ever met in my entire life.
Awesome. Super nice. So I asked him if he had something he wanted to say to this in response. And he gave us a written statement. He would have come on the show, but that just seemed like it was way too much work.
But you and Adam aren't on speaking terms, of course.
Right. and I knew what he was going to say. Shall I just read his response?
I think that sounds awesome.
In the heat of the moment, Adam Christensen said, I think my passionate dislike for the larger form factor possibly came off as a condemning of larger screen size phones and their owners in general. That was genuinely not my intent, he says. I think the size of the device and who it's right for is a personal choice. I think it's right for both options to exist, and I'm happy they do. The larger phone proved to be not the right choice for me, and it is likely not the right choice for many consumers. That does not mean it's not the right choice for others, yourself included, and he's speaking directly to Brad there. As a side note, it's fascinating to me how passionate and divided people get over the size of device choice. The one thing I learned from my experiment, this is his experiment with a large device, is there is not a right or wrong answer, but there is a right or wrong answer for each individual. The trouble is many just want someone else to make the choice for them. Up until Apple released the Plus models, they were doing just that. and most were happy, or at least seemed to be resolved to the fact. Now that that there's choice, there seems to be much more consumer angst. It's an interesting thought.
That is interesting. And see, look at that. Adam is still the nicest guy in the world when he's responding like that.
Yeah, and I know Adam, and Adam doesn't really condemn anybody. He's much less judgmental than, say, me. And
I had no idea.
I knew that he wasn't coming down on large screen devices or their owners, but that he was very specifically talking about his own personal choice there. And I knew that, but I've definitely thought we should give him the opportunity to say so himself, and he did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I totally get why Adam may have come across kind of strong.
Well, because his opinions were strong for himself.
Yes, and he was so disappointed with for himself with the size of the iPhone 6 Plus that when it came time to get his new phone, he made it very clear on many occasions to me that he was not getting a 6S Plus.
Yes, yes. But I told him this on this last week's show. You didn't bother listening to it, did you?
No, I didn't even realize we had a show.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't recommend it, to be honest. But I told him at the time that very much respected the fact that he did a year-long experiment for us.
Yeah, see, Adam's a trooper like that.
But what you also don't know, because you didn't listen to the show, because I didn't tell you, is that he committed right here in front of our listeners, not MacCast listeners, in front of our listeners, he committed to spending a month with iPad Pro instead of his MacBook.
Whoa.
When he's out and about. So, like, in any situation where he would normally take his MacBook, I think it's a MacBook Air, actually, where he would take it out and work, he is instead going to take his iPad Pro once he gets it. He's going to do that for a month.
Oh, I'm really interested in this.
Yeah, and he's not going to take it. So, normally what he does now is he takes his iPad Air and his MacBook Air. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was going to only take the Pro and see how that worked out.
You know, my plan is to take my iPad Pro out in lieu of a laptop as often as I can so that I can see how much I really will be able to do.
So what you're saying is you're not gutsy enough, ballsy enough even, to do what Adam's going to do and commit to a certain length of time where you only use it. That's what you're saying.
There's a thin line between a brave man and a fool.
No, the funny thing is that, like, I know that Adam will actually stick out a full month of doing that, whether or not he hates it at first.
Oh, of course he will. And the reason I'm not going to commit to a time frame is because I know there are specific applications that I use a lot when I'm out, specifically Photoshop. And if I'm not going to be able to do the same image editing things on an iPad Pro that I can do in Photoshop on my Mac, which doesn't mean I need the full set of Photoshop tools, but a specific subset.
Yeah, but how are you going to know if you can't find workarounds?
Well, what I'm going to do is see if I can find the workarounds.
But you know that you will be more... You will put much more effort into it if you don't have a choice.
Okay, here's... How does this sound, Brian? When I get the iPad Pro and I go out... Mm-hmm. To work away from my office, I will take the iPad Pro as my primary computing device. But because there are times when I just simply can't afford to not be able to make something work, I will take along a laptop as a backup tool. But I will attempt to not use it at all.
Mealy mouth.
Hey, do you want cool images on the site?
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough, Adam's the bigger man, no big deal. No big deal at all. Well, yeah, just gonna let that go by. I was waiting for you to interrupt me.
No, I'm not going to interrupt you.
All right, fair enough.
You just don't know when it's coming.
Oh, great. Great. So, speaking of the iPad Pro, did you watch that Jeff Rancho Periscope video?
I didn't get to see the video. It was gone by the time I went to watch it.
Oh, man.
But I really wanted to see it because the whole thing about seeing professional artists just going to town on an iPad Pro.
Yeah, okay. But you say professional artists. We're only talking about Disney animators here.
Okay. Aspiring artists.
Aspiring artist. So Jeff Rancho is in fact a Disney artist, and he posted a video to Periscope, and I'm not a Periscope user. Is Periscope essentially the Snapchat of video?
In a manner of speaking, yeah. When you post a video, it has a shelf life.
I see. Okay. So he posted a video of his hands-on time. Apparently, Apple brought iPad Pro pre-release models. Actually, I'm sure they're probably
at this point they're production models.
Yeah, they're production models, but Apple hasn't actually released them yet. And brought some to Pixar's animators and brought some to Disney's animators, and let them start checking them out with the Apple Pencil and the iPad Pro. And there was a photograph posted. We have a link to that in the show notes. Is that right?
Yes.
By the way, we're gonna have a link to that in show notes.
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, maybe.
And then we have a link to the Periscope video, but you can't watch it. And Jeff actually basically, it was like a 10-minute video of him doing some drawings with Apple Pencil in Adobe's Procreate and Paper by 53.
Actually, Procreate's not from Adobe, is it?
I thought it was Adobe Procreate.
No, I'm pretty sure Procreate's from a different company. Top Men.
Procreate, Sketch, Paint, Create, coming soon. Support doesn't look like it's an Adobe company. All right, well, what do I know? I thought it was, maybe it was an Adobe app.
Well, Adobe does have their new and updated drawing and image editing apps that are going to be native on iPad Pro. So he could have been working in Adobe Sketch, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was working in Procreate, because it's a really cool, really powerful app.
Yeah, I thought it was Procreate.
It's typically one of the first apps that that gets updated for whatever new tablet hardware Apple is releasing.
This is like the second show in a row where I've just made a huge catastrophic mistake.
Well, the great thing is you can edit it out.
I know. I'll do that, so no one needs to know what an editor I am.
Also, I just tweeted out to everyone that you made a horrible mistake.
Thank you. You're the best.
I've got your back like that.
So it was cool. The palm rejection was amazing. This was like their first experience with the stuff, and it was just, it was really cool seeing what they're doing. This is going to be, I think that this is going to be, this is just going to reshape the professional animator studio, graphic arts studio, I'm sorry, landscape. The animator landscape, the graphic artist landscape, the artist in general landscape. I think this is going to have a significant effect on what people do.
And I'm going to expand that group from, you said artists, and I know that encompasses a lot of people, but I like to think of it as creatives, because people are creating art in different ways, and there will be a lot of creative people that can do so many things on an iPad Pro that they haven't been able to do on an iPad Air.
All right, fair enough.
I can't wait to start drawing on an iPad Pro. I mean, my iPad Air is actually like my go-to choice when I need to start drawing new things. I just love using it, and I can do so much with it, and I can only imagine what I'm going to be able to accomplish once I'm using Procreate and Paper by 53 on an iPad Pro. And did Adam say if he's going to get an Apple Pencil?
He did not specify that.
All right. Well, I'm getting a pencil with mine because for me, it seems like I would be foolish to not buy the pencil at the same time.
I think Adam's interest was a little more on the keyboard.
Oh, interesting. Because the keyboard for me holds basically no interest. But then again, I can type really well on the iPad Air keyboard.
I can type well, but I don't want to. That's my thing about the iPad. I type just fine on it, but I don't want to. I want to type on the keyboard.
All right. Well, then for you, it would make sense to get the keyboard cover.
Well, if I was going to get a Pro, I don't think I'm going to. I don't think I'm going to.
Well, if you don't have a clear use case for an iPad Pro, then that's a lot of money to spend on something just to see if you like it.
Yeah, which, of course, you know, that's, we do that for our jobs all the time.
Right, but I have the added bonus. Case. Yeah, for me, I have the added bonus. I have a clear use for the device.
It's true, yeah. And I couldn't draw my way out of a wet paper bag.
I love your drawings.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, man. But hey, you learned a new technique by watching that video, didn't you?
Well, I did. I was watching him, and I asked you about this in the pre-show talk. I noticed that he, because he drew several faces and figures, and he always started with the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you, and you said that you did too.
Yeah. You start with the eyes, and then the body builds out from there.
Yeah, and I always start with the left side of the face.
Which is interesting. But I'm assuming there is an eye on the left side of the person's face, so
well, yeah, no, you're close. I start with the side.
Right.
Like the edge, the shape of the face.
That's trying to make you feel a little better.
Yeah, no, I can't draw, man. I don't know anything about drawing. I can't draw. It's voodoo to me. I watch you people who can just sketch, and it's voodoo. How do you do it?
And yet, here I am, genuinely loving your drawings.
Yeah, well, that's weird. All right, listen, we have some topics. We should probably get to them.
Oh, we do?
Yeah, we do, actually.
Oh, sweet. Not. Okay.
Let's start with... So this is kind of a complex topic. And our heading was what the blank can Apple do. And I don't know why I'm sort of hemming and hawing about getting to this topic, but part of it's because we've talked about this before. And it's Google Now versus Siri and Proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And I read a review of Google Now on Tap, which is a feature of the upcoming and not yet released Android Marshmallow.
You are mostly pedantic.
I am.
I, however, pedantic. Am from Missouri, so the fact that I say marshmallow, and that's the best I can do.
You say warsh. There's no R in wash.
I also say strawberry. You didn't know that one, did you?
I didn't know. I had never noticed that one.
Oh, there you go. Now you've got that one to play with, too.
Nonetheless, Marshmallow, which is the next version of Android.
You know, considering I say warsh, you'd think that I'd totally screw it up and say mashmallow.
That would be funny. Mashmallow.
Mashmallow.
Hey, can you hand me the flashlight? This rabbit hole is pretty dark.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one on your iPhone, you know.
A marshmallow? Oh, right. See, when I'm talking about the food, I say marshmallow. But I specifically noticed that this is marshmallow.
Well, that's because that's how it is spelled.
Anyhow, it's the next version of Android. And one of the things that Google is doing with this, so this was a review in the Wall Street Journal. The writer had been working with it for a week. And her basic premise is that iOS is taking a lot of stuff from Android. Android's taking a lot of stuff from iOS. You're not going to make a bad choice. Whichever operating system you want to use these days is a fine choice. I agree with that.
I agree with that, as long as you can get the current version of Android.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fair enough. But even Lollipop's probably going to be fine.
Well, okay. I'll consider Lollipop current enough.
Yeah, and that's, of course, assuming that you want everything you do on your smartphone to be, you know, to go into Google's profile on you.
Yeah, that's true. You have to decide which ecosystem you're going to buy into and commit to.
Yeah, yeah. I prefer iOS.
Yeah, this is like going steady.
Yes, it is. So, one of the features in Marshmallow is Google Now on Tap. And what Google Now on Tap is, it's just obviously it's an extension of Google Now, which we've talked about quite a bit. So if you're reading a web page or an email or a tweet or a direct message or whatever, text message even, whatever, if you hold the home button down, Google will scan the screen and parse it for information, and then make offer recommended actions based on what it's seeing.
That's really cool.
It's really cool. It's creepy, but it's cool.
Yes.
And so, like, her example was that she was reading an article about Hillary Clinton. So she held down the home button, and Google Now offered her information. I think it was a link to Hillary Clinton's Wikipedia page, her Twitter address, maybe her Instagram, I don't know, whatever. Right?
Maybe her SNL sketch. By the way, did you see that?
I did.
I thought it was pretty funny.
It was a funny and savvy political move.
It really was.
Very, very savvy. But if there's a talk of a restaurant, it'll offer, you know, directions. Or maybe, I don't know if it'll give you reservations, to be honest. If there is a time, maybe it'll offer to schedule something on your calendar. So, I mean, it's just a way of getting suggestions to do something with the information on your screen right now. And it's smart, and it's intelligent, and it's cool.
It is.
And the what the blank can Apple do aspect of this is, it comes down to that thing I've been saying for 2 years now, that Google Now is Android's best feature, and that it's something Apple is going to have a very hard time matching. And now that iOS 9 and Proactive are here, that my opinion on that stands.
I agree. And I think Apple is at a serious disadvantage in this game, because Apple is not willing to sacrifice its users' privacy.
Yeah, Tim Cook recently spoke on this, saying that, you know, Apple knows what songs you've bought, but when you're in the news app doesn't need to know what songs you bought. This is exactly how he put it. And the idea there being that Apple doesn't share information from app to app, nor does Apple allow information to be shared by third-party developers from app to app.
Which
and
is cool.
The idea there is to not make us the product.
And but I really like that.
I love that. But when it comes to proactively offering you content, information, apps, directions, when it comes to offering you this stuff, suggesting it before you ask for it, it leaves Apple at this huge disadvantage. You know, Apple isn't reading our emails. Apple doesn't have a search engine that knows everything we searched. Apple isn't, you know, logging the web pages that we visit. Apple isn't logging the places that we've traveled to.
Right.
And so how in the heck can Apple compete with Google Now?
Well, what it looks like they're going to try and do, based on some recent company purchases, is try and narrow that gap by letting our iPhones manage that information and keep it totally private.
Well, there's... Right. So it does look like it, that. I mean, that's what Apple's already doing. So Proactive is the feature in iOS 9 that proactively offers you information, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it keeps all that stuff local to your phone.
Right.
But Apple is making investments in additional companies. There were two purchases that you covered this week.
Right. The first one was Vocal IQ. And Vocal IQ is a startup. I think this one's out of London. And what they've done is develop this technology that uses what's called deep learning for artificial intelligence. And the way they've applied it, it lets a smartphone handle a lot of what would otherwise be the heavy lifting that a cloud server would deal with, as far as parsing out information so that you can get responses back. But then it goes farther than that, because it's also a system that can learn based on talking with you and can respond in ways that are more natural. So this would be more like having a conversation as opposed to dictating statements that elicit pre-established responses, which is what Siri does right now. It sounds very natural, but it's the responses we get, they're preset, and it's just it has a place where the information that we need gets injected into what's being said. But Vocal IQ would let this become more of a natural conversation thing.
And then there was Perceptio.
Right. And Perceptio is the company that, I'm pulling a top men, Brian. I just forgot what it is that Perceptio does. I think Perceptio is the one where it can look at your sensors.
Well, Perceptio is the company that's making something that is designed to run locally.
Oh, see, I just mixed the companies together.
Well, you conflated them, actually. Mostly pedantic.
Well, hey, you know...
The Vocal IQ's whole thing is vocal interaction.
Right. Okay, and so Perceptio is one where it's storing stuff locally, and it's using your sensors.
Processing locally.
And it can also use your sensors, meaning like the microphone and the camera, to be able to learn more about what's going on and handle data appropriately for you.
So, in other words, Apple is investing in additional artificial intelligence technologies, people, patents, ideas that can continue to do stuff on your device so that your data, your information, your lives aren't going to Apple servers where they right. will be processed and chopped and stored. And here's the problem with that. I mean this is the only thing that Apple can do if Apple is going to adhere to its commitment not to rifle through our digital lives.
Right. And so I'm glad Apple is aggressively looking at ways to enhance what Siri and Proactive can do for us. But I also totally get that there will be limitations because Apple is not going to sell us out.
Yeah. And the thing is that machine learning, artificial intelligence, that sort of stuff, the way we currently approach it, it heavily depends on crunching big data. By big data, I mean, you know, massive sources of data so that patterns can be found. And this is something that can be done in the cloud so much better than it can. I mean, smartphones are getting faster and faster. I mean, we had the benchmarks from a couple weeks ago that said the iPhone 6S was as fast as the MacBook Air.
Right, yes.
And that's great and everything, but a MacBook Air can't do this stuff any... I mean, it's impressive. And smartphones are only going to get faster. Mm-hmm. But they will never, ever be able to match what remote servers can do, because the remote servers are also always going to be getting faster.
Right.
And it's interesting. Apple is going to have to overcome significant and probably even unseen barriers to ever come close to what Google Now can do.
Yeah, I'm not sure how Apple could ever match what Google Now does. They can narrow the gap.
Well, and they did. Like, the introduction of Proactive narrowed the gap between iOS and Android.
Mm-hmm.
But now Google's going to extend its lead again with Marshmallow.
Yes.
With Google Now on tap, and Google Now is constantly getting better anyway with what it does, what it retrieves, what it suggests, what it finds, what it thinks.
Sure. And Google has the advantage there because they have so much data to work with.
There's so much data on us.
Yes.
Apple needs to go into search. Apple needs to go into search, man. They need that information about what people are searching for and what information actually works for them. They need that for this artificial intelligence stuff. And that's not even touching the idea of, like, would you be okay we've talked so much about how Google, plunders our email for information about us. And that particularly offends me.
Mm-hmm.
I will accept what Google does for its search engines, but I don't like the idea that Gmail accounts are being read by Google. I do not like it.
Yeah, that bothers me a lot.
So would you accept Apple reading our email if Apple wasn't selling the information?
I would have a really hard time with that. Just the notion that a company is scanning through all of my email is very distasteful to me.
It is very distasteful.
And it really bothers me that Google does that. I mean, yes, I have a Gmail email account. However, I use it only for those services that Google has where I need to log in. It's not an email account that I actually use for anything.
Right.
And if Apple were to start sifting through all my email, well, then I'd have to rethink how it is that I manage my email.
Well, I mean, if Apple were to start doing that, we wouldn't have any choices. There wouldn't be any options. I don't know. I guess it's a third party.
Well, would it be something where Apple is going through every email account that we have in Mail? Is it something where they're looking at just our .Mac, .me, iCloud accounts?
When it comes to Proactive, the best thing would be Apple going through all of our mail.
Yes.
And the best thing would be that Apple tracks everywhere we go. And the best thing would be that Apple looks at every single web page that we pull up in Safari. The best thing would be that Apple looks at every app that we do, how much time we spend in it, and what we're doing in those apps. That would actually be the way for Apple to get the best data for Proactive.
Which is exactly what Google does.
And it's the thing that we've ranted and raved about. And, there are a lot of times, you and I were both very dismissive of large screen devices.
And here we have them. And here I am really excited about getting an iPad Pro.
Yeah, and the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6S. We both love them.
I love my iPhone 6S, and yet I'm still frustrated by the screen size.
I mean, I know what my rationalization was. Okay, here's the deal. I love Google Now. I'm not willing to do what it takes to get it, which is being an Android user.
Yeah, I totally get that. I mean, the whole idea of having a system that can be that intimately aware of what I do and help me in ways that are really useful to me is really compelling. But the cost to my data is too steep for me.
Yeah, becoming the product. I don't want to be the product. I don't want to be any more the product than I already am.
Yeah.
So, and my rationalization, if Apple started doing all of these things but wasn't selling it for profit, my rationalization would be, well, at least they're not selling it for profit. But the reality is that this corporate entity would still be plundering my digital life and storing my digital life. And if Apple or Google or Facebook or anyone else is storing stuff, it can be gotten by a government. And if it can be gotten by a government, it's more likely than not that at some point said government would use it for purposes that are not what I would consider to be legitimate.
Yes. And
that's always the issue with...
Yeah, there's a long documented history of governments around the world overreaching their limits and using information about us in ways that are not good.
Well, you know, and for that reason, so Tim continues to go on his tour. He spoke on NPR about privacy and about mm-hmm. how, you know, backdoor governments shouldn't have backdoors into their services, and he won't accept it. It's a non-starter, etc. And so here's the reality. I don't think Apple will ever cross this line, at least not with Tim Cook in charge. Simply because part of their line right now is that, you know, hey, look, this device is on the data. This data is on the device. We don't have it. And it's encrypted. And our users are in charge of their encryption. Our users are in charge of their data. So Apple can't even cross this line to make something like Proactive be as useful as we might want, because doing so utterly changes the privacy equation with governments in particular.
Yeah, and that's clearly a line Apple does not want to cross, and I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with that too, yeah.
But it looks like Apple is going to, at some point, narrow the gap a little more, hopefully, thanks to the companies they've been buying, because they will have ways where some of the things that otherwise would have to be handled on a remote server will be handled locally, meaning just on your iPhone.
Right. And that's where, I mean, Apple has bought many artificial intelligence companies in the last several years.
Yeah, and Apple clearly wants to make our devices smarter. And snapping up these AI companies is a big part of that.
Yes, I agree with that.
So I think the answer to the question, what the blank can Apple do? Apple can do their best to narrow the gap by buying the companies and developing the technologies that let them handle a lot of Google Now-like processes and features locally on our devices. But that's the best they're going to be able to do.
Yes. In a nutshell. So in the meanwhile, Apple is continuing to snap up real estate in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so I hear.
We had a new report of Apple sealing the deal on a 777,000 square foot office complex, a rather large campus that's going to be destination architecture, but this time around Apple didn't design it. This is an existing project.
Right. So does that mean that they're buying a building that's already there?
Or? No, the building has not been built yet.
Okay.
So it's an approved project.
Okay. So they bought a project ready to go.
Yes. Essence. And it's in Sunnyvale. They've bought a project that is ready to proceed. And what we have no idea at this point whether or not there will be changes.
Okay. So what Apple has is a set of plans for a new building that will be a supplement to the spaceship campus. They have a piece of land to put it on.
Well, then we gotta back up. Because Apple doesn't own the plans or the real estate. They would be leasing it.
Ah, okay. Do you like how I'm playing the average person here?
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
That's it would house some 3,000 employees, which is a fourth as many as the spaceship would claim. It's this gorgeous building. It looks like it's got kind of a completely different kind of spaceshipy feel to it. More like a Jetsons spaceshipy feel to it. You looking at the image right now?
Yeah. It's cool.
It's really cool. It's no Apple Campus 2.0, but it's really cool.
Well, it sounds like what they want is a secondary space with, they need a secondary space, but it's not supposed to be their flagship. Therefore, they don't want a design that that outdoes the spaceship.
I would imagine it's even simpler than that, is they need more space, and here's some great space, so giddy up.
Sure. And the design is something that they're like, yep, this will work for us.
Yeah, this was, you know, whoever, it's, who's the company that actually owns this?
Land Bank?
Land Bank Investments LLC. It was built and designed for a tech company to use. You know, it's these three buildings that surround a central courtyard, and then there's, you know, parking is effectively hidden from those buildings, and some of it's going to be underground. And you know,
that sounds like exactly the sort of place Apple would want.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, or anyone else too, any of the other big, massive, mega rich tech companies. And and then there's that space in Sunnyvale. I'm sorry, in San Jose that Apple has gotten some kind of deal on. I mean, man, it's the point here is that we're looking at a company that is going to grow far bigger than it is.
Mm-hmm. Apple, which is amazing.
Yeah, Apple has been snapping up real estate all over the place. Of course, you know, so is Google, so is Facebook, so are the other companies, but we're focusing on Apple here. Apple has been grabbing up office space all over Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, San Jose now, Cupertino. Like, Apple effectively owns everything or leases everything in Cupertino as it is. But this is a major, you know, another 3,000 people here. That's a major investment in space. And of course, you know, Apple is still going to own Infinite Loop. So, I mean, this is a company looking to grow. And I would say that growth indicates far more than the things that have already leaked, including the car.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the car, that's really cool. But what we're looking at here, this is Apple saying we're going to be a lot bigger than you realize.
Yeah, and even still, they'll probably still be smaller than Microsoft is today. But it's interesting. I would just so love being a fly on the boardroom wall. You know, knowing all of the things.
Yeah, there's some really cool and really interesting pieces to this story that we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe what we need to do is hang out with someone like Al Gore, drop some change on a few drinks, and see what we can get him to start fessing up to.
I'll start working on that.
Awesome. You know what? I'll come out just to sit there and get to drink with Al.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. And we'll have, of course, to ask if it's okay if we call him Al. That to me seems fairly obligatory.
Yes, yes, it does. or maybe Yeti, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, no, Yeti. That's what he's going to call me, or you.
All right, so iPhone 6, since you and I did a show, did an ACM at least, we've done TDO.
Mm-hmm. We get around.
The iPhone 6 came out. iPhone 6S, actually, I like to call it. iPhone 6S, 6S Plus. You and I both got an iPhone 6S.
Yes.
So what do you think so far?
I've been actually pretty impressed, and I've also been really surprised, because what I expected was that I would use it in pretty much the same way that I used my 6, and the only noticeable changes would be every now and then I'd be like, hey, if I press hard on this, I can do something else. And what I found is that I am now treating my iPhone more like a personal assistant that is just out and about with me. And I'm using the Yo Siri feature a lot. Do you like how I said Yo Siri?
Yeah, because you're keeping it real.
Yeah, well, and because I don't want to actually wake up Siri and have her start doing stuff. Because the last time I did that during a show, Siri listened to me say several sentences and then decided I really wanted to hear a certain song and then just started playing it.
Right.
But yeah, I'm actually talking to my phone as if it's my assistant with me. And I'll walk into my place with my phone in my pocket, and I have some HomeKit gear in my place, and I'll say, "Yo Siri, set my office lights to 50%."
You were well on your way towards some kind of rap song there until you got to the last line.
I totally was.
But all right, so hey Siri has become there. She goes.
See? Just
I don't understand. There she goes.
I know, story of your life. She just doesn't understand.
I had the phone on mute. I actually thought that would
no, it doesn't.
That would keep Hey Siri from speaking.
No, she will just talk right over the mute.
Yeah, I see that now. All right. So you have found I've only used a smattering of that.
Now, I wonder if you would be using it more if you had any HomeKit enabled gear.
Oh, probably. But, you know, I know I've told you this before. I use my iPad Air more than I use my iPhone.
Yes. Yep.
And, you know, since Apple didn't bother to update the iPad Air, you know, I don't have Force Touch on an iPad Air yet.
No, that's true.
I don't have Hey Siri on an she didn't come on that time. Don't have that feature on an iPad Air. I mean, I use my iPhone, but I don't use my iPhone as much as I use my iPad. And like one of the things I was most excited about was 3D Touch, and I do in fact find it useful, but I don't know that I always remember to play around with it.
I'm finding that if I have an app that does not support 3D Touch, I'm instantly annoyed, which it really surprises me. But on the other hand, it shouldn't, because I always give my little soapbox speech about economy of motion and all that, and the fact that I can just press and hold on an icon on my home screen and the options that I use most often are just right there is great. So now I press and hold and I slide to the option I want and I'm doing whatever it is. So in some cases, I've saved a tap. In other cases, I'll save three or four taps. But even if I'm saving a single tap, that adds up over the course of a week. And sure. Especially over the course of a year.
Well, and yeah, fair enough. I wouldn't try to make the use case for 3D Touch that, you know, it's going to save you time. But I would say instead the use case is that it makes interacting with your device easier.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ultimately saving me time, but it certainly is making it more convenient and more accessible.
Here's one of my favorite things about 3D Touch. So one of the things you can do is force press an icon for an app. And if the developer has added support, you can get some quick options.
Yes, I love that.
Right? But that's not the thing I like. What I like is that if you force press on an app and the developer has not built that into it, it does the 3D Touch tap in such a way that it lets you know that there's nothing there. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it totally does.
So, and what it does is it starts to go into the 3D Touch mode where the background blurs out.
Yep.
And then it just snaps back. And so that lets you know, no, you're doing this right. There's just nothing here.
Yeah, which is really nice. But it also kicks off my frustration factor because I tap on and hold on something and it doesn't do anything. And I'm like, really? No, that's not what I want out of this. I want my pop-up menus. One thing I discovered recently was that if you install an app update that supports 3D Touch, mm-hmm. if you haven't launched the app since it updated, the 3D Touch features probably aren't going to work.
You need to launch it and quit it before it'll work.
Yeah.
Here's another thing. For one thing, I'm shocked that the Settings app doesn't have.
I was stunned by that.
It should absolutely give you a pop-up menu of at least the categories.
Right. Yeah, I pressed on it several times thinking I'm doing it wrong.
Here's another thing that is an omission, in my opinion. If you go to a folder,
yep,
it doesn't even give you the 3D Touch feedback.
No, if you hold long enough, it takes you to jiggle icon mode.
Right, which is not a force touch. That's just the long touch.
No, but it should totally force touch and bring up a list of the apps in the menu. Yes. It's like the spring-loaded folders from the Mac from years ago.
Yes, that's exactly what it should do. I am shocked that it doesn't.
I was really shocked, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
of course, I bet you that comes.
Yeah, maybe that'll end up being one of the surprise things that they roll into OS 9.1.
Or 9.2.
Or 9.2, yep. And now that I say that, I'm picking up a device that I have running the public beta of 9.1. No, still jiggle icons.
Yeah, I hadn't seen anything to that effect, so, you know, I hope that changes soon. I certainly love, I've said this several times, I said this on TDO, I said this on the Tech Night Owl when I was on that show last week. I love how fast the success is. It is fast.
It is fast. It's surprisingly fast.
I want Proactive to be more useful.
It will be. Patience, young
Jedi.
It
will be. It'll even be more useful in its current iteration as it learns more.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But right now, it serves as a time-sensitive launcher. Really, that's the most useful feature.
Well, that's a start.
For me.
Yeah.
But I love how fast this device is. It is actually quite impressive.
I've been very impressed with the performance. Very impressed. Have you seen any of the photos that I've taken at night with mine?
No. How will I miss those?
You've been a very busy guy. But they're on Instagram.
Yeah, I know. So how will I miss them?
You've been a very busy guy. Or you just don't care anymore. I'll go cry. Let's go with you've been busy.
By the way, speaking of Instagram, follow Chrissy Hot Dogs.
You know, I am, because you suggested that to me earlier today.
I'm telling our listeners, follow Chrissy Hot Dogs. She's a great photographer. She lives in New York City. I found her because she had taken a couple of great photos of the Fifth Avenue Apple Store, the Cube, including photos when one of the panes shattered. That's how I found her. But she's a great photographer. She's always posting. I would say that 80% of her photographs are really, really good, interesting. You know, great perspective, good color. She knows what she's doing.
That's awesome. And so when I said, "Oh yeah, I'm following her now," what I was doing was giving you a conversational endorsement.
Fair enough. Now what I'm doing is I'm going to Jeff Gamet. I'm looking for one of these night photos. There's a night photo.
Now, are you using Force Touch in Instagram?
I am aware of it. I did a story actually looking for with the 10 apps that support 3D Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And I covered Instagram as one of those. Yeah, anyway, so what do you think of the nighttime photos?
I've been impressed. And
did you turn off the thingy thing?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. And the thingy thing you mean is live photos. Doesn't make any difference.
Have you done some A/B testing there?
I have. And okay. What I did to make sure that it was as fair a test as possible, I actually mounted my iPhone on a tripod and took photos.
Did you do a story on this yet?
No, this is all going to be in the big iPhone review that I'm working on.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter if you're doing live photos or if you're doing just regular photos. The image quality is the same. What I did notice, though, for that it's a really big difference. If you're doing a close-up shot on something compared to the iPhone 6, holy crap. I took photos. You know, I have this thing where I take photos of produce.
Mm-hmm, you do?
And so I went to the farmer's market and took some photos there because, hey, produce and it's outdoors and there's always interesting things. So I took photos of turnips because the colors were like really neat that day. And the close-ups that I did on my iPhone 6, you can see the root network that, you know, kind of stringing off the bottom of these turnips. On the 6S, it looks like I've actually taken a photograph from a microscope. You know, where you can look at microscopic animals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a much closer shot of these roots, but it looks like something that's microscopic. And it's surprising the difference. And I've also found that one of the colors that I've always had trouble with on the iPhone when I'm taking photographs are reds. They can burn out really easy. And that's not nearly the issue on the iPhone 6S as it was on the 6 and earlier. So that's really cool.
That may sound like a weak endorsement, but knowing Jeff as well as I do, that's a pretty strong endorsement.
No, that's actually a really strong endorsement. I mean, one of the things that I did was I went looking for reds and just started taking all these photographs just to see what I was going to get. Mm. And I was very pleasantly surprised. So, yeah. I'm pretty pleased with this camera, and I did a FaceTime video chat where the person on the other end did not know that I was using an iPhone 6S, and we were like not even a minute into the conversation, and she says, "I can't believe how crisp and sharp you look. I can see the pores in your face. What camera are you on?" And I said, "Well, it's just the FaceTime camera on the iPhone 6S." Totally blew her away.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that was really cool.
That is cool. You know what else is cool?
Do tell.
We're out of time. That's not really cool.
No, it's not cool. But you know, it's... Yeah, it's a relief to know that once again we managed to come up with enough interesting content to talk about for a whole hour.
Well... You say that.
Yes, I do. I say that.
You say that. We'll have to let our listeners decide for themselves.
Well, they keep coming back, so I'm just going to go with it.
Do. We are lucky, lucky folks.
We really are. Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Hey, we talked about Instagram earlier. My Instagram handle is jgamut.
And mine is geektells. That's GEEKTELLS. Geektells. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.